Welcome to What is Going Ohm's Conversations with Money Show, where you get to learn the secrets of how love and money are interlinked in ways you never imagined, and transform your relationship with money for good. Here are your hosts, Sandy Sedgbeer and Sarah McCrum.
Hello, and welcome to part five of Conversations with Money, co-hosted by me, Sandy Sedgbeer, and energy coach and consciousness of money expert, Sarah McCrum. Over the past 4 months, we've examined money from many new angles to create a new understanding of what it really is. Today, we're going to be talking about the power of our money stories and how we can dissolve those that no longer serve us and create better, more fulfilling stories. Sarah, hi, good to have you back again.
Hi, Sandy, it's great to be here, as always.
So, you've been helping entrepreneurs, conscious business owners, and game changers master their personal energy for 20 years. You're the author of Love Money, Money Loves You, which provides much of the inspiration for your popular Consciousness of Money programs and online courses. And you've not only been talking to money for years, but you've also been talking to people about their money stories for many years. So tell us, really, where do we start with this whole business of unraveling some of our money stories?
It's actually, it's kind of a big business when you start to look at money stories. And a warning up front is it's probably not a good idea to get too hooked into it. They come up, the stories come up, and when they come up, they need to be looked at. But I don't think it's really helpful to be constantly digging for stories, because it's like digging a hole in the ground. You can keep digging forever. It just gets, you get a bigger and bigger hole. So it's really important when we start to look at money stories and things like that, that we realize that the purpose of digging that hole is to be able to plant a tree or something. It's not to dig a bigger hole. So stories, I think there are two kinds of stories particularly that catch people. One is their personal stories, things that they were told when they were a child, stories they've picked up that they apply to their own relationship with money. And many of them have come even, I would say, from past lives. So they're quite subconscious, but they're stories that play beneath the surface. And then the other stories that it's really important to look at are the stories that we hold about money in society. And that's a very big topic these days, because people are much more aware about how financial systems work. There are clearly some dubious things that go on with money. Money drives corruption, greed, a lot of these, the most challenging behavior on the planet, a lot of it seems to be connected with money. So there are all those stories that we will maybe have very strong opinions about. And that affects our relationship with money as well. So I think of, like, it's like the internal stories and then the external stories. But the point is, all of them change how we feel about money and therefore how we act around it.
I love money stories. Perhaps I'm a bit perverse.
You love stories, I think.
I love stories. And, you know, there's two in particular that come to mind as we're talking. A man called Ayman Sawaf wrote this wonderful book, which was Sacred Commerce. And in it, he was telling a story about in ancient Egypt that the merchant priests, merchant priests. So they were priests and they were merchants, a nice mixture there. And but the acolytes, part of their training was that they used to have to go and sit in the marketplace and they would chant. And they were chanting purely to balance the energy, so that in that marketplace there was a nice flow of energy. You know, it was very equitable and everybody was relaxed and there were no arguments, no contretemps, no issues. And I thought that was a brilliant story.
Yes, actually, what a brilliant thing that would be to pay people actually as their job to do that kind of thing for the financial system now, because there are so many people who are so good at holding the space or creating an energy field around something that has a really benign effect and bringing in powerful, beautiful, or divine energy to support the activities that we have as human beings. And those people are some of the worst paid people on the planet who have this natural talent. And they could support some of the best paid people on the planet and best paid systems on the planet to work in a more benign way. I think that would be an absolutely brilliant idea. In fact, I think I'm going to take that one and play with it somewhere. There's a little kind of industry to be created there.
You're going to create a little workforce, are you? A very happy workforce.
Oh, that would be amazing. Wouldn't it be amazing to have people working like that? I've always wanted to do it for food production. I know some people, you know, they love the food that they grow, their apples. And Prince Charles is famous for talking to food that he grows.
Yes. But
to do that for the financial system, I think that's brilliant. Thank you, Sandy.
You're welcome. You know, a few years ago, I was talking to Patricia Cota-Robles, and it was, back round about, I would say, 2011 or 12. And at the time, there was a lot of anger with Monsanto. And I was also very angry with Monsanto. And she said, you know, don't be angry and give that kind of energy, you know, to that direction. She said, it would be so much better if you just put your energy on thinking about the crops, you know, the genetically modified crops or the things that they are doing to the food and the soil, etc., and just transmuting it into something more beneficial, which made a lot of sense. You know, we all put this energy into whatever it is the issue is that we have around money, whether we're railing against, you know, the rich that we think don't deserve to have so much, or the way they're spending it, or the waste that's going on, and angry that the poor aren't getting what they need, etc., when we could be transmuting that.
Yes, it's really important to remember that wherever you put your energy, whatever kind of energy it is, whether it's angry or happy or any other kind of energy, wherever you put your energy, you're giving energy to that.
Yes.
And so when you pour your anger into a system that you hate or are afraid of, you're giving more energy to that system. And so it's really important to make choices about where you put your energy. And yes, you could put it into those crops, or you could pour your energy into locally sourced, high quality food that's grown with love and support that aspect of the food industry to grow and for people to choose it, for it to become more and more and more attractive in whatever way is necessary, so that the market does not choose any more genetically modified, pesticide-laden food. And whichever way you go, we have the ability to choose where we pay attention. We talked about that in one of the earlier conversations. And that is a very powerful thing that you can do, even if you feel quite powerless against a huge institution, organization like Monsanto. You always have the power to pay attention to things. And it's a way bigger power than we realize.
This is why I like stories, because they give us new perspectives, new ways to look at things. You know, another story that I have is a friend of mine who at one point was having a lot of problems with money and thought she might have to declare bankruptcy, and she thought she was going to lose her house. And at the last minute, somehow, and while she was very worried and a little bit in fear, she also had this other energy flowing alongside it that actually money doesn't really exist, you know, so what is she worrying about? And the interesting thing that happened there was she was suddenly given an opportunity to redo that whole mortgage thing, which she'd been denied, but suddenly they changed their minds for some reason, gave her, remortgaged the house at a ridiculously low interest rate, put some money in her bank account for something. And when she went along to the bank, the teller said to her, yes, the money's here. And she thought that she would just try something. And she said, well, can I have some of it? And she said, no. And she said, well, why not? And she said, well, it doesn't actually exist. I mean, it's there as a number, but we don't actually have it. It doesn't really exist. Which had us both, you know, rolling in the aisles laughing, because that, you know, it doesn't exist in some respects. It does not exist in the way that we think it exists.
Yeah, that's a really interesting story, because it, to me, what it points to is the fact that money, as I experience it and share with other people, really is an energy. So although it didn't exist in that case at the level of the bank, it absolutely existed for your friend, because she was able to stay in her house rather than lose her house. So at that level, that's the reality of money, is that it shifts our experience. When we have access to money, whether it's real or not, it's real because she was still in her house. And if the bank had not put that apparently non-existent money into her account, or she would not have been able to stay where she was. So in one way we can say it's not real, but I think what we're really saying is that it's really real, but the numbers and the way we formulate money into cash and into transactions, is that there's a degree of unreality about that, but there's a real energy that sits behind it that we interact with all the time, and that literally changes what we experience in our life. So I think that's a fascinating story at both levels.
Yes, and you know, the thing that interests me about it is you're looking at, because of a shared belief system, she was able to stay in her house. You know, the people who put the money into the bank account, as far as they're concerned, they put it there. The teller believed it was there because the numbers were there. And so a decision is made based on a belief system.
At one level, or maybe actually what happens is that the decision is made at the level of the energy, that because she had that trust somehow that everything was going to be okay, and perhaps somewhere she really wanted to stay in her house, even if she couldn't see a way how to, that is what actually happened. And then it has to look like something here, so we kind of believe it. But I think that that story is going beyond belief at some level. Mm. And it's showing us that the energy is more powerful than a certain level. Because, like, there are many beliefs in there. There are different beliefs. There was a belief that she was going to lose it, and at the same time, there was a belief that it was going to be all right, and that it didn't matter, and it wasn't real. And so those beliefs were powerful as well. And it's stories like that the more you look at it, the more it just helps you to see that there's much more to money than we tend to realize. And I think that it's worth reflecting on. You're sharing brilliant stories, Sandy. I think that they're worth taking away and reflecting on more deeply. Like, what's this really telling us?
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about, you know, this conversation and money stories. And I was thinking, you know, how we often say, what is money really? And it's such a hard one for so many people to grasp, because we invest so much in it. I mean, when you think, if we see our bank balance dropping to a level that is less than comfortable, you know, it immediately creates a physical, emotional reaction in us. You know, we get anxious, we get fearful. I mean, it can get our heart rate moving. It can do all kinds of physical things. And likewise, if it goes up, we get excited, or, you know, we calm down because we've got a sense of security. So, you know, and it's just really, it's a number. It's, you know, maybe something that exists or doesn't exist. We may be able to use it, we may be able to spend it. But it's, you know, it's this level of power that it has over us that fascinates me.
Well, in a way, what I learned, which I didn't expect to learn, because when I started working with this, I was very switched off from money. I wasn't really interested in it. I was typical person interested in energy and probably not even spirituality so much at that point, but that kind of thing. And money didn't have a lot of place in me. What I really learned from working with it is that actually, although it's just a number, and yes, we can get afraid, people can get afraid when the number appears to be going down and they know it's going to go up again next week, even. People can have all kinds of weird psychological reactions. But what I found is that those numbers give us a bit of a handle on something that's very important. And when the numbers are low, it's always because at some level, we are not fully engaging with the energy, let's say the energy of manifestation, which is really what the energy of money is. And so it's an indicator that there is something that we could pay attention to. I know for me, I go through waves where money's constantly increasing, and then it'll go, I'll tend to plateau. Or I'll get comfortable and it's like, oh, everything's fine now and I don't really pay much attention to it, and then it can easily drop off. And then I look at it and I see the numbers dropping, and this is at whatever level, all the different levels of income that I've experienced so far, I've experienced the same pattern. And when I see it dropping, I know that I've stopped paying attention. And it's not paying attention constantly to my bank account or how much money am I making, or it's actually about paying attention to what am I contributing, am I open to receiving. Because usually what happens is either I contribute less, I'm giving less, or I've closed myself off a bit from receiving, or there's some other story. This is actually what links us with the stories. So when you see the numbers going down, that's usually an indication that there's a story going on inside you that is saying, I don't need to engage with money. Or maybe there's a fear story going on that says, if I have more money, I'm going to be a bad person. So I've found that the numbers, because they're rather precise, you can't lie about them too much. They're an incredibly good indicator of something, not necessarily what we think. So being rich, we know, doesn't make you happy. So having lots of money is not an indicator of happiness. It's not an indicator of well-being. It's not an indicator of many things. But it is an indicator of something. And that something will be different for each individual. But I think, especially if you're in the category of people who often feels you don't have enough money, or you don't have a great relationship with money, I think the numbers are very interesting. And it's telling you to open up to more money rather than closing down and saying, I don't need money, or being angry about money or disappointed in it. It's saying, look, pay attention. There's something here. You need to do something about this. And I found it the best personal development system I've ever come across because of the numbers, because you cannot get fluffy about it. You have to be real about money.
Even if money isn't real. You're listening to the Conversations with Money show with me, Sandy Sedgwick, and Love Money, Money Loves You author, Sarah McCrum. And this month we're talking about the power of our money stories and how we create new stories around this much misunderstood expression of energy. We'll be back with more after the break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OmTime's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? As a long-time editor, book judge, spiritual magazine publisher and radio host, I've read thousands of books and interviewed hundreds of authors and teachers, so I know what's worth reading and what isn't. Now, with the spiritual book market growing increasingly crowded, more and more people are seeking my help in finding the authentic voices, the empowering tools, and the genuine skip the BS guidance that will make the most difference to their spiritual development. So I decided to make it easier by bringing my knowledge, experience, and considerable network of contacts together in the No BS Spiritual Book Club. There are no ads, no joining fees, no obligations, and no BS. Just an ever-growing library compiled by recognisable and respected names of the 10 best books that help them the most on their journeys. Plus, free book excerpts, audios and live video interviews where you can quiz them about their spiritual journeys and their 10 best list choices. Your time and money are valuable, your spiritual journey even more so. If you're looking for genuine guidance from people who've walked this path before you, check out sedgbeer.com. Click on the No BS Spiritual Book Club tab and join the club. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com. I'll see you there.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Sarah, I had a thought during the break, and I remember back in the days when I was studying NLP, there was a school of thought about motivation and whether one is motivated as away from or towards. And there was quite a distinctive difference, you know, that somebody could be motivated towards making money just because of desire. There was a desire there. But often they would stop wanting to make money when they felt they'd reached a certain level. The motivation went away. So that is a towards some, you know, towards something. Their primary motivation is towards, and then it disappears. And then there's others who are motivated away from. So they could be really poor and motivated to get, you know, as much money as they can to get as far away from poverty, but then that would drop off too. Do you have anything, have you come across anything like that, that speaks about desire or fear in that respect?
My book speaks a lot about desire, but at a slightly different level, so perhaps it's another thing to bring in. Which is that when we're in touch with our natural desire, which really comes from inside us, it doesn't come from our heads, it's not a mind desire, and it's not a I want this because my best friend's got one, or I want this because other people think I should, or I ought to be a person like that. It's just a spontaneous, natural soul wish, if you like, for an experience, something you'd love to experience in life. There's a very powerful attraction in that, that for me connects more with the energy of love, or with the spirit of love within us. So I think the motivation towards and motivation away from is a certain level of motivation that is often more, it feels more head driven. And perhaps also there's a degree of, there can be a degree of fear in there as well, because that motivation towards wealth can require a lot of sacrifice. That's that very strong motivation to achieve often is people sacrifice almost everything else. And what my book was pointing to was a more expanded, or we could say more holistic, kind of motivation, which I think of really as the desires of my soul and my heart, which are natural. They're almost childlike in their innocence. They're just the things that we would love to experience in life, or the person I would love to be, and the things I would love to have. But they have a simplicity about them. They light you up. When you think about that, it really lights you up. Literally, your face lights up. And that kind of motivation, it feels very different, and it doesn't result in driving work or hard work. It results in a lightness of being at the same time. So that's the kind of motivation that I've explored much more, both for myself and with people I work with, really because of the book, because it showed this different way of sourcing motivation altogether.
Well, I think motivating towards and away from, it tells you a little bit about people's value system, what it is they're valuing, or what it is they're placing as a higher value at that point. And it speaks to desire, yeah, I can get that one. It doesn't say anything about appreciation, though, does it? There's nothing in there about appreciation. And that's something that I think, you know, we need to acknowledge.
Yes, you can work, you can be motivated towards something and achieve it, and then you need to achieve more, and then you need to achieve more, and there's not much appreciation within that. The appreciation isn't necessarily there, and appreciation is incredibly powerful, especially around money, when somebody really appreciates. It opens things up, and I've seen somebody recently who started by appreciating $4, and it was such a beautiful story. She needed lots of money. She's in debt and had lots of financial problems, but she appreciated this $4 sale, and then some more money started to come in. Some $1,000 sales started to come in. And instead of saying all the time, oh, this isn't enough to pay my debts, which is what we tend to do. You know, one of the money stories all the time is whatever we get is not enough, because we're always looking at the big amount that we need. And we don't realize that big amount is made up of lots of smaller amounts. But so she started to appreciate that. And then literally within 3 weeks, she was making $5,000 sales. And she's glowing, absolutely glowing, because she's doing all of that from a place of appreciation and love, and of this really beautiful, simple desire to experience the well-being and the goodness of money. Because money, the real money, the money that is real, is goodness, it's beauty, it's an energy that is as real as you or I am. And you can feel it and you can touch it. And when you're in touch with that, it's natural to receive more as well, not only money, but other things. And her story is a living proof of that. And it all started by appreciating this $4 sale that was way too small to make any difference to anything at all in her life.
Well, you know, I think it could be the whole thing about changing your money story. What does it take to change your story? Because, you know, Maxwell Maltz once said that confidence is built upon the experience of success. So in order to change our story, I would imagine that it's hard for people to change it until they've had a little bit of success in the direction they want. But you've only got to have a setback. And I'm sure the old stories, you know, come racing to the surface. So how do you get someone to change it permanently?
For me, what I found is that the only real way to do it is through awareness, first of all, is becoming aware that you have a story that doesn't have to be true, and that you've given that story too much energy. So maybe it's a simple story like you were told when you were young that money doesn't grow on trees, and it made you feel that you shouldn't ask for more, you shouldn't expect more, and that it's greedy, in fact, or stupid or naive to think that money is easy to come by. And you're not aware that that story's running in the background all the time. But at a certain point, maybe by listening to a conversation like this or reading a book, you start to become aware of it. And then you start to notice how that pattern is playing out in your life. And that every time there's something that you feel naturally drawn towards, which would bring you more money, there's something that says, no, money doesn't grow on trees. That's not possible. That's not going to work for me. That's not right. Or something else. When you become aware of that, actually, the moment you become aware of it, if you can notice it, see the effect it's having on you, and not react about it, don't get all upset or head up about it, but just, it's like, oh, there's that story. I've had that since I was a child, because that's what my mum used to say to me all the time. That's restricting me. Every time I have an opportunity to make more money, which actually I would really like, something holds me back, and it seems to be that story. By observing that with that level of clarity, that story will start to lose its power. And what will happen is another story will come up. Or you can create a story for yourself. But usually what happens is when you notice these really limiting stories, a more powerful story comes in to replace it. It happens almost automatically. And that's what I love. It's a very simple, natural process. Just notice what you're doing, and it will immediately start to change, and a better story will come in. Of course, there are people who teach you also how to make very powerful stories. I personally prefer to teach that this is what money really is. Money really is an energy of love and generosity, and you can connect with it, and you can feel it, and you can have a relationship with it. And so let's see what stories arise when you're feeling that energy, because very beautiful stories tend to come up, which are not created by the mind. They're created by the feeling and by your heart and your soul. And they're much more powerful stories.
Mm. In a conversation you and I had recently, you mentioned that we often elevate money in ways that we shouldn't. What do you mean by that?
I think it's like we've got a kind of twisted relationship with it. So in one way, we've made it incredibly important. And at the same time, we can hate it or be afraid of it. So that's a way that elevates money that is distorted. It's not what money really is. Money is not something to be afraid of. So we make it into a kind of monster in our life, because it's something that's incredibly important and we're afraid of it. Or we somehow know the value of it, maybe because we have responsibilities for family and we need the money to take care of them. And at the same time, we feel that there's something wrong with making money. So that elevates money in a way that produces a very unhealthy relationship with it. If you can elevate it in a frame of money is this incredibly powerful, enabling energy that helps us share our contribution with each other, that enables us to receive from other people all over the world. No matter how extraordinary it is that we can source things from all over the world, and we have this thing called currency that allows us to do that, and we don't have to exchange goats and sheep all the time. And if you can see the beauty in it and the power in it and come from this place of appreciation and love, then you can elevate that, because what it does is it creates more beauty in your life. And when you create more beauty, you want more of that and more of that, and you share more of that with other people, and then you feel like you're really living. So I think that this does come back to our money stories. When we elevate money stories that are just detrimental to our well-being. And then we fill them with fear, and they become more and more and more powerful. And that's clearly just not a good way to live.
It's so interesting when you look at the history of money, because when you do, you begin to understand that we created this. And it's changed its form. Let's say the currency has changed its form. The thing that we put a value on has changed its form. I mean, you just mentioned sheep, goats, cows, you know. Once upon a time, they were the things that people wanted to give in exchange for something else. In the Roman days, the Roman soldiers got paid in salt because that had such a high value. And over the years, it has taken on different forms. So when you think about it, it's such a malleable thing that we really should understand that we can do anything with it.
Yes, and how beautiful it is actually that we have this very ephemeral kind of money now that does barely exist. It can be numbers in a bank account. The notes have no intrinsic value. They only have value when you pass them on to somebody else. They don't have any value in their own right as pieces of paper. And there's a lot of discussion all the time about asset-backed currencies and gold-backed currencies, and you know, we disassociated the currency from gold. But for me, because I know that really money is energy, you can't ever disassociate it from the energy. And so that's the fundamental power of money. And that is something that has such extraordinary flexibility. We can't even really begin to think about what that power really is. It sits beneath the creativity of human beings. It supports our creativity. And so it's really a magnificent thing that we're just beginning to tap into the power of, and to realize that we can play with this. Money invites us to play with it, not to be so serious about it, to see how powerful it is and what we can do in our lives with it. And I think that that has a really good hope for the human, for human beings, to be able to play with this beautiful energy of manifestation, of money, of materialization, which is an energy of sharing and contributing. And it can be used to elevate humanity rather than to diminish us.
Yeah, I love looking at the different ways that money has changed. You know, recently I found some old £20 notes and that my mum had, you know, buried somewhere, and they're no longer legal tender because they've changed them and it's gone past the date where you can take them to the bank and get the equivalent anymore. So here's these £20 notes that look like money, that used to be able to be spent like money, but they're absolutely worthless now. They're just pieces of paper.
Yes, which exactly shows one part of the system.
Yeah. You're listening to the Conversations with Money show with me, Sandy Sedgbeer, and Love Money, Money Loves You author Sarah McCrum. And in this episode, we're examining our money stories and how we can create new and better ones to play with. We'll be back with more after the break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. So, Sarah, this conversation is taking us right back to a word that we have used before, and I think we did a whole show about it, which is value, isn't it?
Yes. Value is part and parcel of what money is all about. Money is how we share value with each other.
And we've all got different values, and it's so interesting looking at, you know, what we value. And why we value what we value.
And so often that's driven by the stories we've been told. So, you know, your mom or your dad told you that this is really valuable and this is really unimportant. For example, one story that I grew up with was that in England, I think this was very common when I was young, nouveau riche people, which is basically something rather like what I am now. It's people who made money in business, new money.
Yeah.
Basically, we used to pretend shoot them when we saw people driving fancy cars or people who looked like that. We'd kind of make little gun fingers and shoot them from our car when we were driving around. So I grew up with the idea that business is somehow dirty or almost slightly
trade.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
And so I learned to not value business. And for years, my first business, I didn't even realize I was in business. I didn't know I was running a business, and I was, literally. That sounds so weird, but that is literally true. It was years later that I realized that I'd been running a business. And for years, I would say, I'm not a business person. I'm no good at business. I don't know how to do business. And that all of that came from that little story of business people are somehow slightly disgusting people. Because in England in those days, what was valued was old wealth. Interestingly.
Yes, and I know a number of people who, you know, belong to that group who would live in a way that you would never even know they had any money. If anything, you know, they would wear secondhand clothes and, you know, be really abstemious and hide their wealth.
I had a friend
as if it was embarrassing.
Yeah, I had a friend and her father was in the wine business and he was clearly doing very well and they lived in a huge house and they went on holidays abroad and things like that, which we didn't do. My dad was in the Navy and in those days people in the Navy were not paid particularly well. But they pretended all the time that they were really poor. It was fascinating and I was even aware of it actually. I kind of knew what was going on. I could see it in some way, but there was this disjunction in my mind because I was looking at this family that ate steak every day, whereas, you know, in my family we never ate steak. Like, that was like completely off the charts. We went to a restaurant once a year, which was a Chinese. Once a year we went to a Chinese restaurant. It was a real treat. And for them, you know, it was a completely different story. But yes, it was that was the British story. In other countries, in other cultures, there were different stories, but these stories have such a powerful effect on us.
So examining those stories and really, you know, I mean, putting them under the microscope is a great way of beginning to dismantle the power that they have over us.
Yes, I did a very interesting exercise recently that I read in a book that's called, I've forgotten the name, it's something about getting over your money craziness, your money madness. And it asked you to go back to one or two of the most memorable things that happened to you around money. And the first thing that came to my mind, this was fascinating for me because I'd never recognized this as a money story. The first thing that came to my mind was when my dad was out of work for a while and he started making his own beer and wine and he absolutely loved it. And there was this incredible sense of adventure around it. And I realize that I had grown up with this feeling that when money is tight, or when there's very little money, that's when you get really adventurous. And I started experiencing that when I was 18, which was the first time I really had any money at any level that I had control over, and I was living abroad. And I remember having a weekend where I literally didn't have enough money to buy all the food I wanted, and I absolutely loved it. And in the end, it was a bit ruined because people kept giving me food, and I felt like, I mean, actually, that was amazing. But it was almost like my adventure was ruined because I wanted to experience this thing of not having enough money. And so many times after that, I found different ways of repeating that story, that the real fun happens when you don't have much money.
Well, aren't we seeing that? Aren't we seeing that now? I mean, how many people are resorting to, you know, making their own bread and doing things that they never would have done before? Partly because there are shortages, but partly too because people are being very money conscious.
Yes, and it's interesting to see how different people respond under this particular situation. Yes, it definitely changes our perspective. And that's the interesting thing about money. You see, it always brings you back to what do you value? And so one person will say, well, I really value good food. And so if I'm going to spend less money, I'll make bread rather than buying cheap, horrible bread. And somebody else will have completely different values, and they'll react in a completely different way. So that person who makes the bread is saying something about how they value time, how they value money, and how they value their energy. Those are the three things, really, that we value: time, money, and energy. And every decision we make is a decision about what do I value most right now. And so it's when we start to examine those decisions that we uncover the stories, because we realize, oh my goodness, do you realize that every single day I spend 2 hours doing something that actually I don't value? Why am I doing that? Why am I trolling through Facebook for hours, for example, when I know perfectly well that it's a waste of my time? Why aren't I doing something more creative or growing my business or something? And there we start to uncover the stories, when we catch ourselves out doing something that doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. And isn't it interesting how whenever somebody is trying to show you, demonstrate how reasonable the cost of something is, like a subscription, for example. And I've done this myself on a magazine I used to run, where you say, well, for less than the price of a cup of good coffee every month, you know, you can have this. So we have to find something else to put it up against.
Yeah, it's very funny. I always laugh when people do that, because it's always, almost always coffees, whether it's a coffee a day or a coffee a month. It's often coffee. Or otherwise, it's putting education against a university education. And it's usually not, you know, we're comparing apples with trees or something. It's like completely different values.
Or coffee with tea.
Yes. It's funny, but we need to orientate ourselves. I guess somehow we need to orientate ourselves in terms of what do I really value? And I think this is one of the things that's very tricky, because we live in a very marketing driven environment at the moment. We're very responsive to marketing. We often get a bit disorientated around our values, because somebody can start telling you what you should value. And then stories come in, oh, I should be like so-and-so down the road, or I should be like that guy who's marketing this course that tells me that if I do these things, I could be making $1 million a year in 6 months' time. And I don't think that I probably could, and I'm not sure if I want to, but somehow he's very, very persuasive, and so maybe I do want to. And then it starts to mess with our values. And again, this is why I think the deeper reflection work is important, because it allows you to really find and ground yourself in your own values. And then it's easy to ignore people selling you things that you don't want. And it's also easy to identify the people who are selling something that is of genuine value to you and will help you grow and develop something you want to grow and develop in your life. And these are the kinds of decisions that we have to make every single day about our money and our time and our energy.
Yeah. And as you were saying, you know, using that example of the person telling you that, you know, you can be making this amount of money, if you don't want to do it, if something within you says, I don't really want to do that, you feel bad. you feel guilty because everybody else wants to do it. What's wrong with me? Why don't I want to do it?
And there's a little piece of you that does want it, because most people do actually want to experience at least prosperity. So yes. There are stories that run underneath as to why you both want it and don't want it.
Yes.
And we're attracted to prosperity because that's a part of thriving. We're attracted to abundance. We're attracted to generosity. And that requires you to actually operate with more money. It doesn't have to be a fixed sum. A million is a lot for somebody and not much for somebody else. So we're attracted to it, and at the same time we're repelled to it because of stories that we've learned that, you know, maybe I'm going to be a bad person, I won't be virtuous, I won't be able to go to heaven, all these kinds of things. And so again, the stories come up again and again and again.
Mm. Yes, and I think when we kind of get a little bit confused and bamboozled by all these stories, because there are so many of them, you know, one of the ways I like to play with these kinds of things, belief systems, etc., is Byron Katie's work. You know, is that true? Is that really true? And do the four questions and the turnaround on it, and you very quickly realize, actually, no, that's just a belief, a thought, a story.
One of the very interesting stories I come across all the time is people saying, I want more of something. I want, often they do it in their business, I want more clients, or I want somebody to do this work in my business. And I sit down and I look at it, it's like, hold on a moment, you've already got that. Why are you saying you want it? And they're so used to saying they want something that they don't notice when they've got it, and they continue to want it. It sounds so bizarre that it's almost hard to imagine, and yet I find myself doing it. And I see people do this all the time. So we have a habit of saying, I want, I want, I want, I want. That often gets fulfilled at a certain point, and we just go on thinking that we're wanting something that we've already got.
Well, isn't that, you know, one of the things that a lot of people in the spiritual arena say with the law of attraction? You know, if you say I want, you will go on wanting.
Yes, I mean, I have a little bit of an issue with that sometimes, because there's a way of saying I want something that is genuinely light and actually works really well. But if you come from a place of wanting, if you come from a place of, oh, you know, I've never got this thing, I really want it, I never have it, that is definitely the opposite of attraction. But if you just say, I really want to go on holiday to Vanuatu sometime, this is just genuine, I'd really love to go there. If that kind of love feeling lies beneath the wanting, it's actually very powerful.
So that's more of a desire.
Yes.
Which has a different kind of energy to it than want.
It's the energy.
Yeah.
It's the energy that counts. So it's not the word, it's the energy that sits behind the word.
Yeah. Well, we've almost reached the end of the show again. It creeps up on us every time. So are there any parting words that you want to offer? Anything that you're doing that you want to quickly share?
Well, I'll link two things together. I have a program that's called Thank You Money, which teaches all of these kinds of things, of course, that I'm sharing here. It teaches you how to do that in a grounded way, to have a daily practice so that you shift your relationship with money. And the reason it's called Thank You Money is because of the power of being grateful. So to be grateful, which links with appreciation, opens up flow. It opens up currency. Currency is a word that actually means flow. And so it's a really good starting point. And I'm seeing people now, I teach them to say thank you money when good things happen, and I'm seeing people just lit up by this genuine appreciation of money, of the energy of money, that is opening them up and bringing more money into their personal ecosystem. So I think to really just remember that, thank you money, be grateful for this beautiful energy that's playing through your life, and I'm quite sure that you will see more good things happening as a result.
Well, good. Okay. That's about it for this month's show. I just want to say that, as always, we leave you with the question, which is, if you could ask money a question, what would it be? If you haven't done that yet, try it. It's an interesting exercise. You can learn more about Sarah's book, Love Money, Money Love You, and her workshops and online courses at sarahmcrum.com and theconsciousnessofmoney.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of What Is Going On, and Sarah will join me again for the final episode of Conversations with Money on Thursday, July the 2nd. Till then, it's goodbye from me, Sandy Sedgbeer.
And goodbye from me, Sarah McCrum.